cliffcentral.com.
It is time for It's Going to Be Okay with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. He's a renowned psychologist, also head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg. And we received an anonymous email this week, but let's first welcome Dr. Hanan. Hey, Doc, how are you?
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Good. Happy Monday.
Hey. Happy Monday to you, too.
All right, so I've got an anonymous email from one of our listeners, and I know we like these anonymous emails because usually they've got quite juicy stories, but obviously for the people involved, it's not so easy for them to reveal who they are, and there are you know, things that they're worried about. So I'm just going to read it, and you can help us wade through it. So I have been in a relationship with my fiancé for 10 years. We were high school sweethearts. We have a child together. He recently confessed to having cheated multiple times and says it stems from trust issues he developed in past relationships. I mean, they were high school sweethearts, so what past relationships?
Yeah, anyway, how many past relationships?
Where he was cheated on by women he loved. On the two times I caught him, he justified it by saying it's because of me either frustrating him or not being there for him, which pushed him away. So he's blaming her, clearly. I've also cheated in the past, but he claims to have forgiven me and he says he trusts me. He claims the cheating was never physical. It was just a matter of him needing someone to talk to. This has caused a rift in the relationship. I'm not sure if I can ever trust him again. Can he get over his past securities? How do I trust him again? We were planning a future together since we have a child, and we're willing to work things out. But maybe you can help. So, complicated, right?
Not so much, actually.
Okay.
It's quite simple. You should never use your past as a justification for current or future behavior, especially if the current or future behavior is dysfunctional.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're not a child anymore. You know, when you are 4 years old, you're being dictated to in terms of what to wear and where to go to school and what to eat and who you're going to be friends with and your sleeping routine. But as you move into adulthood, you make choices for yourself. You have the power to control your next move. You're an adult. You can control your behavior. You know, you must understand that we as human beings, we can pretty much justify anything. And we do justify anything.
Yeah.
So we can justify bad behavior just to help us sleep well at night. And so the truth is, I don't buy the idea of my past behavior or my past experiences are making me behave this way. I don't buy it. I don't buy it as an adult, because my question to this particular adult, the husband, is this current behavior working for you? Is it making your life better? There are kids involved.
Yeah.
Is it making the family unit better? And listen, I can justify any behavior. And again, the question is not what has happened, but rather, are you behaving in a way now? Is your personal behavior now functional and serving a great purpose? Remember, I keep on repeating this on the show because it's that important. The difference between children and adults is children judge their behavior based on how they feel.
Right.
So if it feels good, it must be good. And if it feels bad, it must be bad. They use their emotions as a barometer. Adults don't use their emotions as a barometer. Adults judge whether what they should be doing whether what they're doing is right or wrong based on whether it services a particular goal, not based on feelings. Feelings are irrelevant. So now when he's confronted with all these options, you know, sleeping with other women, being with other women, breaking away from the family trust and the family unit, does it service his goal? And I'm assuming it doesn't. And therefore, it's completely dysfunctional. So to answer, she has the anonymous emailer had two questions. One, can he get over it? Well, the answer is, as an adult, he should be.
Right.
If he matures up, he should be. Of course, there's no reason why he wouldn't, unless there's something functionally wrong with him and he's remaining as a child. Unless that's the case, then of course he can get over it, and he must get over it for the sake of the family. It's not about him. It's about the family. And the second question is, how does she begin to trust again? Well, I see this so often in my practice where these women, or the other way around, these men, but let's just talk about these women. They come into my practice and go, Hanan, my husband is having an affair. He's cheating on me.
Mm-hmm.
How do I begin to trust again? So I say to these women, we'll bring him to therapy so we can have a conversation together. And a lot of the times they're just not prepared to. And my answer is, well, you can't build the trust on your own.
Right.
You just cannot dance this dance on your own. The way you're going to rebuild the trust is through current and future experiences proving to you that you can trust. So if the person keeps on breaking the rules of the game, how do you trust again? So the analogy that I've used before is relationships are like a game and you've got to define the rules quite clearly. If you and I decide to play chess, and well, that's the rules are pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you imagine you break the rule. You start moving pieces in a way that's not allowed.
Yeah.
Well, how do I begin to trust you again? Well, I can't trust you unless you stop breaking the rules. I can't do this on my own. If you keep on breaking the rules, at the end of the day, I don't want to play with you. So my answer to her is, how does she begin to trust again? Well, she cannot do this by herself. She can't do this on her own. She has to, first of all, there's a couple of things. Number one, he has to acknowledge that what he did was wrong. And the reason why he has to acknowledge that what he did was wrong is one of the eight fundamentals of a romantic relationship is shared values, common and shared values. We both must value, our primary value must be the same. There's a lot of gray areas in relationships, very few black and white values.
Right.
And the black and white we have to share. So first of all, he has to acknowledge that what he did was wrong. Second of all, he has to assure her, one, through language, that's the first thing, that it will never happen again. And three, give it time. Give yourself time talking to the wife. Give yourself time. Give him time to prove himself right. So in other words, if he says, listen, I am trustworthy. You can trust me again. You can rely on me. I am consistent. I am predictable. I am honest. Well, give yourself time to give him time to prove that to you. With time, you'll begin to trust again.
So, Doc, I mean, I'm listening to you, and this sounds a little bit like, if you'll pardon me being crude about it, it sounds like the Comair liquidation. I mean, either you decide that there's enough in it to save the company, there's a business here that's worth saving, there's something worth putting money into, in the case of relationship, time, effort, or it isn't, and you just have to dissolve it and liquidate it. Is that a very cold way of looking at it? Because that, to me, you have to approach these things with, as you say, you know, your brain rather than your heart. And people,
yeah.
I know when you say it, it just sends shivers down some people's spines when you say emotion is not what adults should be dealing in. Your feelings are not important in this situation. Apply your mind to it. Think about the advantages, the disadvantages, how much you care, how much you want things to work, what the pluses and the minuses are, and then go for it and put in the work, which is a lot harder. But whenever you and I say, or you usually say, the feelings are irrelevant, I know that there are thousands and thousands of people listening to that going, ugh, that makes me very uncomfortable. Why is that? Because I know why you're saying it. I get it. That's how I like to think. Why is it that so many people, when they hear the words, your feelings are irrelevant, they pack up, they shut down, they don't listen?
I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that we've been conditioned to by you know, media and movies and people around us who say, follow your heart. You know, what is your heart telling you? You know, what is your destiny? And that removes all of the reality of, hang on, let me just look at the facts here.
Do you think, is that part of it, Doc?
Well, I think, first of all, I mean, what is the... I mean, it'll take us probably about 100 episodes to go into what are emotions, how emotions are created. But in a nutshell, emotions, they're not connected to a real divine prophecy or a real divine entity that tells you the truth. Again, I can feel bad, grab a cup of coffee, and within 3 seconds, I feel good again. The coffee changed my emotions. That's the truth. I can have a donut and feel really good again.
Exactly.
You know, that's the reality.
Right.
So you feel like having a divorce, grab a cup of coffee, and suddenly you're madly in love. So that's the reality. So emotions are not a true north or a true guide in terms of what you should be doing. And you should never fall in love with your heart first. Never, ever, 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 ever.
Sure.
Because emotions don't highlight what it's going to be like in a year's time or in 2 years' time or in 5 years' time. You don't know. And by the way, people say, well, logic doesn't either. But logic is a much greater predictor of what's going to happen down the line than emotion is, for sure. Now, people will say to me, when it comes to love, should you never feel it? The answer is, of course you should. But head first, heart will follow. Head first, heart will follow. But to your point, Gareth, you know what I believe in terms of the coin theory. Mm-hmm. You know my belief and my philosophy about the coin theory.
Yes.
And for those of you who don't know, the coin theory is you wake up every morning and the universe grants you 100 coins, 100 units of energy. Mm-hmm. Use it as you wish. Those moments of coins are up, your body goes, good night, and you wake up the next morning with another 100. The problem is when you run out of coins at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and now your body's not tired, but now you're going to be functioning at a deficit.
Yeah.
And then something has to give. Your mental health, your physical health, your awareness, your ability to see opportunities, your ability to face challenges, something has to give. You can't run at a deficit. There has to be a cost somewhere.
Yeah.
And we know we engage with certain people, certain entities, or certain things, and we start with 80 coins, and 2 minutes later, we're at zero. We know those people. We know those environments where we're like, oh my God, I just need a break. And we know the other way around as well. We can start with 20 coins, speak to somebody for 5 minutes, and suddenly we're at 80 coins. Mm-hmm. We know those people too. And I want everybody to be aware of where they invest their coins and be very stingy with where they invest it. So to your point, Gareth, with regards to the marriages, ask yourself, am I getting out more than I'm putting in? Mm-hmm. A marriage is not there for any other reason except to make you better. Why would you be with somebody that doesn't make you better?
Yeah, but
it's ridiculous.
Doc,
rather also, be by yourself.
There seems to be, and I can't help thinking that this compulsion comes from religion, where people feel like suffering has to be a part of the picture. You know, there are a lot of people who build suffering into their relationships. And the reason I'm giving religion a bit of a short end of the stick here is because sacrifice is such an important part of most religion, right? If you don't sacrifice something, you won't get something as a reward. You take the risk, you get the reward. But sacrifice is important because you're delaying gratification so that the future you can do better than the present you. In relationships, I've seen people saying, oh, no, our relationship is really hard. We have to work at it every single day. It's always compromise. It's always we're mostly unhappy, and we don't necessarily get out more than we put in. But that's what it's all about. And it's almost as if they're enjoying the suffering. Now, what do you make of that?
Yeah, you know, they did this research. It's a very famous group. I'll give you the title and the name, but they ask a group of people to go to the doctor. And the doctor would administer two types of treatment, painless treatments and painful treatments.
Okay.
And so the painless treatments were like, well, go home and do some exercise or go home and eat better or go home and get some rest.
Right.
And the painful treatment was the doctor would administer some painful form of maybe administer injections or some form of physical manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked these subjects, a week later, who felt better.
Mm-hmm.
And they found that the people that were administered the painful, even though they were absolute nonsense, the painful treatments, mm-hmm. they felt better because there was suffering involved compared to the painless treatments. Actually, you wouldn't go back to the doctor that says, listen, you don't need anything, just go home and get some rest. Because you think, like, why am I paying this doctor for? But the doctor that massages me or injects me with even nothing, the saline solution, I find a lot more effective, even though it's nothing, just because I feel the suffering. I feel like my body's working my body's suffering through this pain, which is very helpful in inverted commas to your point. So suffering, for some reason, us as human beings, we place a lot of value on it, but for no real reason. Look, to be fair, in relationships, there is compromise. There's no question. There are challenges. There's no question. There are moments of, I need to work at this. There's no question. But should it be sufferable? Never, ever, ever, ever. You know, I always give the analogy. This is important. If you take anything out of today, this is it. When you go to the gym, mm-hmm. and you're lifting heavy weights, there's a big difference between when you're lifting a heavy weight between straining and being injured.
Yes.
Between straining and being injured. You know, when you're lifting a heavy weight and you're doing some form of exercise and you feel like it's heavy and your body's straining versus when, oh, I pulled something. Now, ask people, how do you know the difference between strain and an injury?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, well, I just know. I just know. Your body just lets you know that this is no longer a strain on my body. This is not an injury. And I say to people in a relationship, you should feel like perhaps you're straining, but never you're injured. Because when it feels like you're injured, the relationship is wrong. something is broken. You should stop doing the exercise. You should stop doing the exercise and reevaluate the way you're doing things. If you're straining, it's good. It allows you to grow. It allows you to self-develop. It allows you to be better. That's great.
Yeah.
But the moment you're injured, reevaluate your routine in the gym and reevaluate your routine in a relationship.
That's some good advice. And there is nothing noble in suffering. I mean, a lot of people feel like suffering has to be part of everything that they do. It doesn't necessarily. I mean, there's something to be said for compromise. There's something to be said for sacrifice. All of those things are important, but I don't think suffering needs to be built in unless you're a bit of a, what do they call them? The misogynists, right? And not the misogynists, masochists,
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it self-flagellation?
Yeah, but I mean, masochism,
There shouldn't be suffering. There shouldn't be any injury in a relationship. You shouldn't suffer. The moment somebody comes into my practice and says, I'm suffering,
yeah,
I'm like, well, you're in trouble. There shouldn't be suffering. There should be a challenge. There should be a strain. There should be compromise. There should be a challenge. There should be a million different synonyms for this is not easy. That's okay. But never, ever, ever suffering. The moment you're suffering in anything, by the way, in a relationship, in a job, at the gym, whenever you're suffering with any activity, you should question whether the activity is right or wrong.
There we go. So that puts paid to a lot of people's theories this morning. I'm sorry if you joined the show this morning thinking that your feelings were going to be relevant or thinking that suffering was noble, because Dr. Hanan has just disabused you of both of those notions.
Absolutely. It's irrelevant. Your feelings are irrelevant. But it doesn't. We don't have to get emotional about it. It's the truth.
Right.
The feelings are irrelevant. Make decisions based on whether it services the goal.
Mm-hmm.
100%. The art time that we'll do a show when feelings are relevant, but for the most part, making a choice for the long term, put your feelings aside and make a decision whether it services the goal.
Spot on. All right, Doc, thank you so much. Those are very, very big and important things we can learn on a Monday morning. First thing, start your week with that, and you can't possibly go wrong. All right, Doc, we'll see you in a week's time.
Nice to see you. See you later.
Very good. By the way, if you have a specific issue that you want to bring up with Dr. Hanan, we can do that for you. You can remain anonymous if you prefer. Just send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com, and we will not mention your name if you tell us not to, just like anonymous in the case of this email. We've had people who come on and they're happy to talk about their situation. If you want to do that, you're welcome. We would love to hear from you. Give us an email, drop us an email. We'll be sure to put you in contact with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. Cliffcentral.com.